This is a brief report on the 46th Convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, a report designed to convey information and interpretation, and perhaps even to outline some of the significant aspects of this convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod just concluded in Detroit. Participating in this discussion are Dr. Walter F. Walbrecht, who is the executive director of the Synod, Dr. Martin Miller, who is the editor, executive editor of the Lutheran Witness and Lutheran Witness Reporter, and Mr. Elmer Kramer, who is the managing editor of the Lutheran Witness Reporter. I'm Pastor Arnold Wessler, a member of the headquarters staff of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. First of all, I suppose we ought to ask each of you what you might think was the single outstanding feature or factor of the convention. Dr. Wolbrecht?
I thought one of the delegates had a significant observation in this regard. He told me on the evening of Tuesday of the second week, it seemed to him that God the Holy Spirit was speaking to our synod through the convention in terms of the urgent words of Peter, be sober, be vigilant in the light of the coming of the Lord, but also be very, very busy in the mission of the church. I thought this note of sobriety, of caution, of the desire for stability without becoming static was quite obvious. Don't you think so, Dr. Miller?
Yes, there was a definite progression from the unrest which marked both the open hearings and the initial sessions of the convention. But as the issues were brought to the surface and discussed, it became apparent that this convention served to clear the atmosphere of misunderstanding and a certain amount of suspicion and distrust, and the delegates reaffirmed their confidence in its elected officials and in the boards and commissions that are entrusted with the work of the Synod.
I'd like to ask you, Mr. Kramer, how do you think that the convention came to this conviction that Dr. Miller just described?
Well, it seems to me that the delegates took to heart the theme of the convention, the motto of the convention, Even So Send I You. And I believe this was evidenced in the fact that they passed some far-reaching resolutions on missions. They agreed to join LACUSA, which in a sense is an evidence of moving out into an arena and sharing our...
Maybe you'd better identify LACUSA in case
yes,
someone doesn't know.
LACUSA, the Lutheran Council in the United States of America, which will come into a being if it's approved by two additional synods in January of 1967, and would include the American Lutheran Church, the Lutheran Church in America, the Synod of Evangelical Lutheran Churches, that's the small Slovak Synod that's in fellowship with us, and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. But it seems to me that this is an evidence of the Even So Send I You theme, and then the implementation of all of this by approving the implementation of our mission effort by approving a $40 million expansion fund is just another evidence of the delegates' willingness to listen to the theme and to act on it.
But Dr. Walbrecht, can you tell me, I think if I'm clear, the board of directors had actually recommended a special capital offering of something like $27.5 million. What happened?
I think what happened was that the floor committee first and the convention realized that the board of directors had said a minimum of $27.5 million, but that the boards and spending agencies, in looking ahead towards the future, had prepared a series of exhibits and studies showing the need for growth capital, money to grow on for the church, which was far in excess of the minimum. And as you might imagine, there was a good bit of oratory back and forth. Actually, it was the floor committee which felt that the effort and energy and zeal to be expended in a first major capital effort in, I guess, a dozen years should be more than marginal.
When is it going to be, by the way?
It's supposed to start as early as possible, a great ingathering perhaps in the Pentecost season, just before the next synodical convention in 1967 in New York City.
Mr. Kremer, as a reporter, I would guess that you've sensed, like a lot of people have, that conventions are made interesting by controversial issues. Certainly we had our adequate supply of controversial issues in this one. Did you detect that there was a lot of tension around the convention, and how were these controversial issues resolved as far as you see it as a reporter?
Well, it seems to me that there probably was an extreme right and an extreme left, as some people have said, but the majority of the delegates and those attending the convention as advisory delegates probably were what we might term middle of the roaders. And while the tension on either side, on either one of the extremes, was marked at some times, I don't feel that it was a very noticeable deterrent to successful action at the convention.
I imagine all of you sense that all of a sudden, almost in the second week, the convention seemed to gel, as it were. Was this that anything special taking place, do you think, Dr. Miller?
I think the resolution in which the convention declared its determination to uphold the doctrinal content of synodically adopted statements, and calling upon those who teach theology in the church to discuss any, shall we say, new approaches to interpretation of the scriptures with peer groups before presenting them to the church, and also to be careful in their presentations, had a great deal to do with satisfying those who were concerned about the direction in which the church was moving theologically. The commission was charged...
Which commission?
The Commission on Theology and Church Relations was charged with a number of... to study a number of theological issues. And when you consider that this commission meets but four times a year, meets perhaps two, 3 days at a time, they had a really impossible task. And I believe that this convention understands and is willing to wait out a continuation of these studies. If I may add, closely aligned to this resolution was the resolution on this comprehensive hermeneutical study, studying the rules of interpretation governing the scriptures is vital to such really burning issues in the church as inspiration, inerrancy, revelation, the interpretation and application of specific scripture texts. And once the convention agreed to have such a comprehensive study made, once the convention was assured that this is all under study and will include these controversial issues, I think the air cleared and the convention was ready to move forward.
I'd like to ask you, Elmer Kremer, Dr. Herms mentioned several times in the second week that he wanted to pay tribute to the delegates for the calm and very deliberate way in which they spoke. Why did this happen?
I think this was very, very noticeable, by the way, and I also think maybe it was a reflection of the calm and deliberate way in which Dr. Herms himself handled the convention. He was always... very gracious. He recognized people who wanted to speak. He gave them as much time as the convention would allow. And from my vantage point, it was especially noticeable in his meeting with the press that he was always very calm, deliberate, and concerned that they would understand things correctly.
And would you say that when finally the various responsible boards, officials, and so forth reported that the delegates sensed that these groups were actually undertaking their assignments with a sense of responsibility?
I think that's true, yes.
May I add, I think Dr. Harms' determination to let the delegates speak, to say frankly what they think and feel on the floor of the convention, to have everybody hear the arguments and then reach decisions, contributed in no small measure to this resolution of difficulties and determination to move forward.
Dr. Albrecht, you made an interesting comment. I think you used the word static. How do you explain the fact that here gathered all these hundreds and hundreds of delegates from all over the country and world, in a sense, and they were quite uneasy, and now suddenly they seem to have been willing to resolve the differences or have conferences, confidence, at least, that the issues were being resolved, that the same convention could almost so overwhelmingly vote to participate in this new Lutheran Council and also launch the biggest capital fund drive we've ever had?
I think this rests also, to a great extent, in our pattern of conducting a church convention. I'm not aware of any which includes all the features we use. I can't claim that any is particularly new. But by the time almost half of the delegates to a convention are involved in real, diligent floor committee work, group study.
What do you mean by floor committee?
Well, everything that's submitted to our convention except the most routine or special things like wishing someone a happy birthday or something, has to go to a floor committee, and this floor committee is as representative as the president of the Senate, as moderator of the convention, can make it. So you've got the whole range of opinion, the viewpoints of different sectors and sections of the Senate. By the time this comes out distilled in terms of recommendations, you've got the start of good crystallization of public opinion. And by the time the floor committee's dealt with it, they've got a proprietary interest in it. They don't think that they've been taken in by anybody. They know they're not being manipulated because they exercise all the freedom that the convention itself does. And it's been fun to watch how some good friend who missed the chance to appear before the committee tries to upset the floor committee's report. Most of them don't succeed.
Would you say that the very fact that the delegates here to feel that we know where we stand, that this is one of the reasons that they're willing to go out and conduct mission work a little more aggressively and actually get out into something like the Lutheran Council and speak out? Anybody want to comment?
Well, it seems to me the convention was, and this isn't just trite, forward-looking and upward-looking. I hope also forward-moving. These men weren't minded just to mark time. I didn't notice that in any of the most negative speeches.
I had that feeling, too, and I noticed that, by the way, in talking with a number of lay delegates who indicated that this is the most forward-looking convention they had ever attended. I talked to one who has been at a number of synodical conventions. He's 66 years old, so he isn't a kid, and he felt that this was the finest convention the Missouri Synod has ever had. He's been a lifelong Missouri Synod member, knows what's going on. And I asked him why he felt that way, and he said, well, first of all, I have a feeling that we cleared the air of any doctrinal problems. Secondly, we agreed to go out into the world, both through missions and through LACUSA and through a number of other areas that were passed in convention resolution.
And yet with a determination and pointedness which is not just stumbling into a future. There's a sense of direction.
And neither were they stampeded or pushed.
No, sir. I think it might interest you men, if I pick out of the range of people that talked to me, took the initiative to, one good layman who had never before attended either, I guess, his own district's convention or a delegate convention, not only came as an alternate at the last minute, but got a floor committee assignment because of some unusual experiences which he had had. Well, he came up with sincerity coming out of every pore and told Dr. Harms and me that this was the greatest learning experience about what church work beyond the parish is that he could have imagined. He didn't think there were 20 books he could have read which would have given him the same thing. Another pastor who, after many, many years in the ministry, was at his first delegate convention since seminary graduation, said that this was one of the most thrilling experiences of his life. His exact words were, since my marriage, I have had nothing more profound happening to me.
We started saying something before about the Lutheran Council. I wonder if we'd like to say just a little bit what this will mean if the proposed council comes into being for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. You want to start, Dr. Miller, as you see it?
Well, I think it might be mentioned during the discussion this was brought out, at any rate, that this is nothing new. From the earliest days of its history, the Synod has been concerned about getting together with other Lutherans. Dr. Walther was frequently quoted as being interested in one united Lutheran church in America. And this will be a wonderful opportunity for systematic theological talks based on the scriptures and the confessions with a view to reaching a Lutheran consensus. It will promote theological understanding, which is, of course, vital to what we call unity.
Incidentally, this is a must, isn't it, that we study theology
right.
in Lakota?
Yeah. Right.
Now, Dr. Walter, from an administrative point of view, what will this mean for us?
Actually, it'll both mean simplification in certain areas and some new administrative complexities. In some instances, by way of LACUSA, I guess good journalistic shorthand for Lutheran Council in the USA, we'll be able to do with one or two less administrative steps and levels what we have been doing. In other instances, it'll be formal, programmed participation instead of an endless series of ad hoc things. In other cases, it'll be brand new. But I think it's good for all of us to remind ourselves that except for this mandatory involvement in systematic and orderly theological study that churches will do in requesting this agency to serve them what they want to do. They cannot be coerced into doing anything that doesn't serve them. It's a cooperative service agency.
What are some of these areas, by the way, we should mention them, I suppose, public relations?
Well, we'll be working the divisions of theological study and service to military personnel, the whole area of social action and welfare, as in, for instance, in immigration service we've been doing, this sort of thing.
Campus ministry.
Campus ministries involved, short of the complete pulpit and altar fellowship.
Prior to the convention, the big theme we haven't talked about here at all was the mission survey that Dr. Christman had conducted prior to the convention at the request of the board of directors. Did you feel, Mr. Kramer, that perhaps this thing was actually interpreted and put into action here?
Yes, I think, first of all, Dr. Kressman made a presentation which pretty well reviewed everything he had written. The entire matter was published in the convention workbook in advance, and then a number of resolutions were passed by the convention with very little difficulty, frankly, put into motion many of the things that Dr. Kressman had suggested in his report.
On the long run, a tremendous series of resolutions.
Yes, so that our mission operation is going to be on a much broader basis. It has a much more evangelistic tone, and it seems to me that under the Lord's blessing, we certainly ought to go places in missions.
Do you think that this helped, the fact that the delegates had a sense of direction reading this before they came to the convention, even to finally put the thing into high gear?
I think this is probably a real factor.
You know, this convention had more to deal with, as far as we know, than any other that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
Just volume of work, to say nothing of range of issues.
That makes it all the more remarkable, I think, that this idea of mission really predominated. I must say that I'm less than enthusiastic about convention themes, but this theme did actually, in fact and in spirit, dominate this convention. From the opening service through the daily devotions to the close of each day, I believe the delegates got the message that we are the sent ones, we are on a mission, and this resulted in a total determination that the people of Christ be the Church of Christ and go forward on this mission.
Well, I was going to bring up the matter of changes in personnel, and I would think, presumably, to expedite the mission of the Synod as it was felt. This convention gave the president another assistant in terms of a fifth vice president. It increased the number of members of the Synodical Board of Directors. It created several important new commissions. It cleaned up a lot of the unfinished business of two synodical survey commissions hanging over from the San Francisco Convention and the Cleveland Convention. I would guess it'll be a long time before we have that many and so many varied operational changes.
All right, about 30 seconds each. Can you tell me what you think the significance of this convention may be for Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, for Lutheranism, Christendom, and so forth in the future? And Mr. Kramer?
Seems to me, first of all, it cleared the air of many of our doctrinal problems and discussions. Secondly, I think it opened up our church to a much wider area of service in the whole world through an expanded mission program, and especially in the United States of America through the Lutheran Council of the United States and America.
Okay, Dr. Miller.
The church recognizes that it has a great opportunity. It has the opportunity to reach many people in many places and on many levels of life, and recognizing that we have the Word of God and the power of the Spirit, the gospel of the crucified and risen Christ, there is a determination to go out and be the church to people everywhere.
Dr. Wolbrecht.
Repeatedly also, there was the urging upon the member congregations and the pastors and teachers of a reassessment of each congregation's place in the mission and the ministry of the church. Over and over again, the request was made that each parish should assess itself and be sure it doesn't have man-made or devil-made walls about it which prevent it from being the church on Christ's mission.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. We've had participating in our discussion about the convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod here in Detroit, Dr. Walter Wolbrecht, the executive director of the Synod, Dr. Martin Miller, the executive editor of the Lutheran Witness and Lutheran Witness Reporter, Mr. Elmer Kramer, the managing editor of the Lutheran Witness Reporter, and serving as your moderator has been Pastor Arnold Wessler, a member of the headquarters staff of the Synod. Thank you.